Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th canto, 20th chapter, 3rd verse. Sachaham vitalo bena pratyachal shekatam dvijam pratishrutya dadamiti praradi kitavo yata Chachala sachalam vitalobena pratyachakshe katam dvijam pratishrutya dadamiti praradi kitavo yata sachaham vitilobena Vatya chakshe katam dvijam Pratishrutya dadamiti Praradi kitavo yata Please chant. Ladies, please.
Mm-hmm.
No one else? Word by word. Sorry. Saha, such a person as I am. Cha, also, aham, I am. Vita lobena, for being allured by greed for money. Pratya chakshe, I shall cheat or say no when I have already said yes. Katam, how? Vijam, especially to a, I think it's Brahman. Yeah, to a Brahman. Pratishrutya, after already having promised the Dami that I shall give iti, thus, Prarādhi, I who am famous as the grandson of Maharaj Prahlad. Excuse me. Kitava, an ordinary cheater. Yata, just like. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Translation. I am the grandson of Maharaj Prahlad. How can I withdraw my promise because of greed for money when I have already said that I shall give this land? How can I behave like an ordinary cheater, especially toward a Brahmin? Please repeat. I am the grandson of Maharaj Prahlad. How can I withdraw my promise because of greed for money, when I have already said that I shall give this land? How can I behave like an ordinary cheater, especially toward a Brahmin? Purport. Bali Maharaj had already been blessed by his grandfather, Prahlad Maharaj. Therefore, he was a pure devotee, although born in a family of demons. There are two kinds of highly elevated devotees, called Sadhana Siddha and Kripa Siddha. Sadhana Siddha refers to one who has become a devotee by regular execution of the regulative principles mentioned in the Shastras as ordered and directed by the spiritual master. If one regularly executes such devotional service, he will certainly attain perfection in due course of time. But there are other devotees who may not have undergone all the required details of devotional service, but who, by the special mercy of Guru and Krishna, the spiritual master and the supreme personality of Godhead, have immediately attained the perfection of pure devotional service. Examples of such devotees are the Yajna Patnis, Maharaj Bali, and Sukracharya, excuse me, and Shukdev Goswami. The Yajna Patnis were the wives of ordinary Brahmins engaged in fruitive activities. Although the Brahmins were very learned and advanced in Vedic knowledge, they could not achieve the mercy of Krishna Balaram, whereas their wives achieved complete perfection in devotional service, despite their being women. Similarly, Vairochani Bali Maharaj received the mercy of Prahlad Maharaj, and by Prahlad Maharaj's mercy, he also received the mercy of Lord Vishnu, who appeared before him as a brahmachari beggar. Thus Bali Maharaj became a Kripa Siddha. That means he became God realized by mercy. He didn't have to go through all of the processes of what we call regulative training. Just by the mercy, and that mercy, as we know, stemmed back from the time that Lord Nrsingadev gave blessings to Prahlad Maharaj and asked him to request a boon, and Prahlad Maharaj said, "May my father be God realized, forgive him for all his faults." And Lord Nrsingadev said, "Not only will your father be blessed by me, but all your generations going back, 11 generations of your fathers will be blessed, your predecessors and your successors, 11 generations." So when the Lord gives such a blessing like this, they must come to pass. They're not merely said as flattering words or encouraging words. They are facts. The question always is when will these facts manifest? So we'll get into that in a few moments. Thus, Bali Maharaj became a Kripa Siddha because of the special mercy of both Guru and Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu confirms this favor. Guru Krishna Prasade Paya Bhakti Lata Bij, from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, 19.151. Bali Maharaj, by the grace of Prahlad Maharaj, got the seed of devotional service. And when that seed developed, he achieved the ultimate fruit of that service, namely love of Godhead, prema pum arto mahan, immediately upon the appearance of Lord Vamanadeva. Bali Maharaj regularly maintained devotion for the Lord. And because he was purified, the Lord appeared before him, because of unalloyed love for the Lord. He then immediately decided, "I shall give this little dwarf Brahman whatever he asks from me. This is a sign of love." Thus, Bali Maharaj is understood to be one who received the highest perfection of devotional service by special mercy. And as a result of that, he became known as a Mahajan. A Mahajan is not just a great knower, which is the literal meaning, but a great knower of the science of bhakti yoga, among the greatest, an authority, one whose words could be fully trusted as coming directly from the Supreme Lord. Omagyana timarandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmalitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. So this is a very wonderful example of spiritual spontaneous combustion. We all know what spontaneous combustion is that when you touch a flame to something which is combustible, it suddenly goes up. It becomes a flame. So here is the... sorry. So here is an example of just that, and it's mentioned very clearly in the purport, that when Bali Maharaj saw Vamanadeva coming across the sacrificial arena, and he saw this blazing illumination coming from him, he was impressed, he was awed, he was enamored and enthralled. It says that he immediately fell in love with him. Gaudiya used that term in his class yesterday. He was riveted. He was absorbed. He was captured. And something was taking place in his heart. Something very, very interesting. As it's mentioned here in the purport, The seed of devotional service, the bhakti lata bij, had been lying there virtually dormant for many, many years. We have to understand that Bali Maharaj gave so much of his time and energy and interest and concerns to building his domain, which was the entire universe. It wasn't enough for Bali Maharaj to simply win the earth or control or conquer the earth, but he wanted to conquer the entire cosmos. And he obtained or received the blessings and power of his spiritual master, Shukracharya, and the Brahmins who were associated with him from the Bhrigu dynasty, to get that, to obtain that. He was literally a powerhouse of knowledge, of ability, and stamina. He had qualities and abilities, especially of the martial nature, which few people in the whole world had. And for this reason, we can see the great power and of gaining the blessings of a materialistic guru like Shukracharya. Shukracharya was not only very learned and knowledgeable, in especially in allowing or enabling, I should say, his disciple to build an empire of the most magnificent, majestic degree. But he also could revive persons even from the dead. And this was one of the reasons that Bali Maharaj sought him out to gain this kind of power that he ultimately received. There was a big fight, as we know, when at the Ocean of Milk, and Lord Vishnu was actually involved in the battle. And Bali Maharaj lost his life, and a number of other leaders lost their lives to the demigods. But Shukracharya, knowing a certain mantra, I think they call it the Sanjivani mantra, he recited this and he brought them all back to life. So when Bali Maharaj learned of this, that he was actually dead and now he was brought back to life, he realized how powerful this Shukracharya is. So let me see if maybe he can help me recapture everything that I have thus lost to the demigods. So he approached him, he begged to be his disciple, to serve him any which way he wanted, and Shukracharya was very pleased, very impressed, and very satisfied with his service, and then asked him, "What would you like?" And of course he told him, "I would like to regain my kingdom." And so Shukracharya, along with the other Brahmins, gave him that blessing that he would be able to do this, and that is exactly what happened. They were able to throw the demigods out of their respective planets, respective positions, and so much so that when the demigods asked the Lord, "What can we do?" the Lord simply said, "You can't do anything now. Bali Maharaj is blessed with a tremendous amount of power. You will have to wait." "Well, where should we go?" "Go anywhere. But get into a disguise so that he doesn't recognize you. Otherwise, he and or his men will try to kill you." So that's what they did. And of course, we know that Aditi, who is the mother of the demigods, just as Diti is the mother of the demons, she was very bereaved that her sons were no longer visiting her, like any mother would feel lonely when your children don't. Even today, mothers and fathers always say when their children go away, they're going away for a month or 2 weeks or whatever, "Please call home, please send me an email, let me know you're alive, get on Skype, I want to see you." So similarly, Aditi had been feeling the pangs of bereavement from her children. Remember, her children, sun god, moon god, ocean god, Vayu, wind god, all of these gods which have very prestigious, very esteemed positions in the management or administration of the universe, she was alone just with her husband. Even her husband had left for some time to go on some meditation retreat. And when he came back is when she said, and she expressed how lonely she was and how she wanted very much to see her sons back in power. And this is, of course, quite normal. Generally, mothers like to see their children successful and seeing them in a prestigious position. They feel identified with their sons, that they are extensions or expansions of their own bodies. And therefore, just as persons in the material world like to always think of themselves as great or glorious or wonderful, now she was feeling depressed and dejected and crushed because of this loss. So she wanted to regain it, recover it. And of course, she did ask her husband for the help, and he did give her the help. And he gave her this vrata, this vow to take, in which she performed a number of a number of various disciplines, lying on the floor, disciplines with respect to cleanliness. I think she had to take 3 baths a day, and eating a very special diet, not a normal one. And so as a result of her discipline and her following the discipline to a T, she was able to accomplish the goal that she wanted, which was to have a son who could defeat Bali Maharaj and all the demons. And who could do that? There was no one in the world except God himself, who in the ultimate analysis had given Bali Maharaj that power. All power comes ultimately from the Supreme Lord. So now it was up to the Supreme Lord to withdraw that power as he would see fit. And he does this in a very unique and very tricky way, as we have been hearing and as we have been reading in the particular text. We come now to a very interesting point. It's a big turning point in Bali Maharaj's life. Up till now, he's been, he's undoubtedly, since he has had the seed of bhakti in him, he's undoubtedly practiced some spiritual disciplines. But his main focus, his main interest has been on amassing, acquiring, accumulating, aggrandizing power, planets. I mean, it's not enough just the earth planet. He wanted to own everything. He wanted to be the Mr. It who had it all. That's a very heady, intoxicating, uplifting feeling for a materialist. Just see, nobody is more powerful than me. I mean, the intoxication of that. So therefore, he was very much enamored, and he very much liked power. If he hadn't liked power, he wouldn't have appealed to Shukracharya to give him that blessing so they could have that power. But again, we come back to the point that I made a little earlier, that he had the bhakti lata bij in his heart, the seed of pure devotional love. It had been put there by Lord Narsingadev in consequence of Prahlad Maharaj's prayers to Lord Narsingadev to please save his father. And so he would not only save the father, but he would also save his future or successor fathers. So what happened is this. As soon as, this is really fascinating, As soon as Bali Maharaj saw Vamanadeva, it was the same as, for example, if you take a match and you strike it against a stone or some carbon, the match, which has no fire or has fire dormant in it, suddenly it flames up. And when you take that match, it flames up. Similarly, when Bali Maharaj sees and comes in contact with Vamanadeva, this is a spiritual flame. This spiritual flame flames up, and he's overcome and he's overwhelmed with spiritual feelings, more so than at any time in his life, because this is the turning point. This is the time where he will qualify to become a Mahajan. Up till now, he's not Mahajan. It's there dormant, but it's not there. And Srila Prabhupada mentions that in one of the purports. So he's feeling this spiritual ecstasy. So how does he welcome Vamanadeva? He wants to give him whatever he can. What would you like? I can give you villages. I can give you cows. I can give elephants. I can give you gold. I can give you silver. I'll give you anything you want. Just say what you want. This is a very spiritual type of feeling. He did this unmotivatedly. By unmotivatedly, I mean he wasn't looking to get anything back except the presence, the continued presence of the association of Vamanadeva. So Vamanadeva, of course, has a mission to perform, and that is, of course, he's got to get back without any violence either. He's had to get back without any shooting of arrows or anything like that. He has to get back because he's under, he wants to fulfill his mother's wish to get all the property back that had been lost to Bali Maharaj. So, of course, he says, what would you like? I would just like enough land that my feet could cover three steps. So, of course, the Bali Maharaj says, excuse me? What? He said, this is so crazy. He's willing to give him villages, wives, gold, silver, and all he wants is enough land to take three steps over. It sounds preposterous. So he thought in his mind, this is just a very, not very intelligent Brahmin. He's thinking like that. And actually what's going to happen is he finds out that he was not very intelligent. Is the Brahmin is super intelligent because he is the omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent Supreme Lord who knows everything, who knows the mind of Bali Maharaj. So what we have here is we have a transformation which takes place here. And this transformation, as it's mentioned over here, it results in spiritual feelings. Now we have to we all understand that Bali Maharaj has also materialistic feelings. He's been living with materialistic feelings for the past many, many, many years. But suddenly those materialistic feelings, they become quelled. They become softened. And the spiritualistic feelings become awakened, become enlivened, become like a big, not a little flame, but a big, big, huge bonfire. A fire of spirituality. So when his spiritual master, this is very interesting, when his spiritual master says to him, don't give him three steps of land. He's the Supreme Lord. He's playing the part of a dwarf. If you give him that, give him the three steps of land, he'll take everything that you've got away. You'll be bereaved of all of your acquirements, all your accomplishments, your achievements, your money, your fame. He's going to take it all away. So Bali Maharaj is mentioned in one of the texts. He thought for a few moments. And in thinking for a few moments, in other words, it was a dilemma. On the one hand, Bali Maharaj had a very big debt to Shukracharya. And what was that debt? Well, I already mentioned it. That Shukracharya enabled him to acquire the entire cosmos. That's a big time debt. I mean, if somebody even, just put it on a more human level, if somebody gives you a Mercedes-Benz and you hardly have to do anything for it, well, you feel some debt for this person. And he doesn't ask you for anything back. So you feel debt. So he felt greatly indebted to Shukracharya. But what Shukracharya was asking him to do is to go back on his promise. And now that Bali Maharaj had become highly spiritualized at this moment in association with, in contact with the Supreme Lord. Therefore, spiritual ideas, spiritual feelings, spiritual thoughts arose in him, which were at variance with, which were opposed to that kind of request. Don't give him the three steps, because you'll lose everything. But wait a minute, I gave him a promise. So a person who's very spiritual takes his promises very seriously. People who are not very serious, they will give a promise, they will even write it on a piece of paper and then ignore it, disregard it, and say, well, you know, I'll deal with that later on. I've seen that happen. In fact, I've been a victim of this several times, where a person actually wrote that they were going to pay me back a certain amount of money at a certain amount of time. They were going to fulfill a promise, and they never did. And then when I questioned that, for example, some person that I had assisted and helped, we had an agreement, and the person was supposed to go not only to India, but to go from New Delhi to go to Food for Life Vrindavan, at the Sandi Pani Muni school, and do some service there at a certain time. So anyway, 1 week went by, and I heard that the person hadn't arrived there. 2 weeks went by, 5 weeks, 6 weeks went by, and the person called me. And I said, well, wait a minute, we had an agreement in writing. And that's why I assisted you to go to India, not really because I'm some special affection for you, but I had a special affection for this particular Sandimani school, which is for impoverished girls. They have over about 2,000 or 3,000 young girls who would just be living in the in abject poverty if it weren't for this particular school. So she had teaching experiences, and so the result was she never arrived there until about 8 weeks later, and stayed for one day and then left. So there you have it. Promise in writing, and then when I questioned on the telephone, I said, well, why haven't you arrived? Well, she said, answer, things move very slowly in India. I said, no, not things, you move slowly in India. So I got into a big to-do, and eventually, I just didn't want to hear the lies anymore. It became so overwhelmingly nauseating that I just hung up the phone, and that was the end of that. So she was paying for the call anyway, so it didn't matter. So anyway, this is just an example, and person had done that once before. So you always like to give one more chance. And again, didn't matter. And so my point is this, is that as we become more and more spiritualized, as we become more sensitive, as we become more sympathetic, as we become more empathetic, as we begin to be able to feel the feelings of other human beings as a result of that kind of mercy that Krishna gives us, he can look at us and know exactly what our feelings are. And he also can convey that particular power to a devotee. Srila Prabhupada had that. He could look at a devotee, or he could look at a new person. He would know exactly where he was spiritually, what kind of service to give him, how much you can insult his false ego, how much you could take him down. Some devotees he was very gentle with, as they say, gentle like a rose. Other devotees he was very heavy-handed with, because that's what they needed to conquer this false ego. And ultimately, although initially they may have been a little insulted or upset or disturbed, but in the ultimate analysis, they realized that what Prabhupada was doing is to try to make them a better human being by getting rid of this false ego, thinking, I'm great, I'm wonderful, I'm glorious, because I did this, this, and that. Prabhupada wanted them to see, you did nothing. Krishna is the doer, and you are simply his instrument. But since you're identifying yourself with your body, you're thinking that you're the achiever, you're the acquirer, you're the victorious person, and that's all wrong. If you had any sense, then you will see that you only reason you succeeded is because you got the grace of your spiritual master. Well, Srila Prabhupada would often say, I am your good karma. I am enabling you to perform and do wonderful things. And that's only because, as it says in our scriptures, by the mercy of the spiritual master, one receives the benediction of Krishna. And without the grace of the spiritual master, one cannot make any advancement. So this is the point. And Srila Prabhupada did not like this idea when devotees would act proud or talk proud, or even if when they would try to act very humble when they were actually being very proud and would say, Srila Prabhupada, you know, I am the most fallen of all fallen. And Srila Prabhupada would say, you are the not most anything, but except you are the most nonsense. So that's how Prabhupada would deal with that. Of course, a person thought he was showing off, you know, some false humility, but Srila Prabhupada could see right through it. It was like an arrow, whoosh, went right through it, and wow, caught red-handed like that. So therefore, similarly, the Lord has that ability, which he gives to Srila Prabhupada, gives to many devotees who make advancement. And we have this this situation in here, so that Bali Maharaj could see that what his spiritual master was asking him to do was opposed to religious principles. It was opposed to devotional mentality. It was going to distance him from the Lord. And the business of a spiritual master, as Srila Prabhupada says so often in his purports, the business of a spiritual master is to enable his disciple through the processes, through the practices, and through his example and precepts to become more and more purified, and through that purification to develop pure love of God, and through pure love of God to experience the most wonderful, glorious ecstasy that is possible. And in that ecstasy, a devotee wants to share it. Because when you're feeling such happiness, such satisfaction, such fulfillment, you can't contain it. I often use the analogy of a woman who is pregnant and she's ready to give birth. Well, I mean, she can't wait till the child comes out. And then when the child comes out, there's such a feeling of relief. Similarly, when a devotee is swollen, if you will, pregnant with the ecstasy of divine bliss, then he just wants to share it. He wants to give it out. He wants to spread it. And so many of you, the devotees who have been going out and giving out books, many people have been experiencing the wonderful ecstasy that comes from knowing that you are doing Krishna's will, knowing that Krishna is pleased with what you're doing, and knowing that these people will have the opportunity to feel the ecstasy, the joy, the satisfaction, the peace, the fulfillment that you are feeling as well. What a wonderful feeling it is to have that satisfaction that you are sharing that which Krishna has given freely. I mean, he didn't come in with a sum of money and say, here, now give me some ecstasy. He gave it because he was pleased and satisfied and gladdened by the effort that you're making. Some of you do big, some of you do small. He doesn't care for that. He cares for the attitude of that we serve with. And if the attitude that we serve with is one of, I am not the doer. Whatever is coming to me by virtue of what Krishna wants me to have. If I was a big, big, big distributor, well, I may become so puffed up and proud that in 2 months I'd be gone from here. And I've seen it happen. So Krishna has to be very careful with how much mercy, how much power, how much glory he gives us. If he gives us too much, then he becomes he becomes blameful for that. So he gives us what we should have, and he also gives us instructions and guidance on how to overcome this pride and self-love and self-gratification and sense gratification. He shows us how to do that. You see, by always thinking. Everything that's coming to me is coming through the grace of my spiritual master, who gets it from Sri Krishna. Therefore, who am I to take credit for anything that I do? We want to do that because we've all come into this world to be lords, to be powerhouses, to be big shots, to feel like a lord. Otherwise, what are we doing here? We don't want to serve God. You come here, you serve your own little body, your mind, your senses, your ego, all that. So, therefore, when we get that, we get a big gulp of that. Wow, intoxicating, uplifting, but also misery-making. It makes us miserable. Because the more we become proud, the more we become distant from Krishna. Distant in which way? Krishna does not like his devotees proud. He tells Indra, after the devastating rain, he says, you are so proud, you think you're that everything is revolving around you. What you need to do in order to avoid doing what you did, namely trying to drown all the residents of Vrindavan because they didn't do a sacrifice for you, what you need to do is become, what was the word he used? Prideless. Get rid of your pride. Know that I am your master. I'm giving you your honor. I'm giving you your glory. I'm giving you the applause. I'm giving you worship. I'm giving you benedictions. You are doing virtually nothing. You couldn't even have any willpower if it weren't for me. Remember that in the mind, this mind consists of thinking, willing, and feeling. There are people in this world, well, I didn't finish one particular point, that when we become very proud and very arrogant, Krishna withdraws the power that we have that enabled us to accomplish that great particular accomplishment, whatever it may be. And as he withdraws that energy, that power, the devotee begins to feel empty. He begins to feel shallow. He begins to feel like something has been removed. The energy, the zest, the vitality, the vigor, the energy, the enthusiasm that he had before, it's gone. Look at Arjuna. Of course, this is not for the same reason. But when Arjuna, he came back from Dwarka and Krishna had already left the world, he felt bereft of all of his power. Well, he didn't need it anymore. So Krishna took it away from him. And he said, I was guarding Krishna's wives and trying to take them back here. And some varmints, they came and they took them away from me, and I couldn't even fight them. Arjuna is one of the greatest warriors in the world, but he had lost the power. Not for arrogance, that was not the reason. It was simply because it was time to wind up his business. But the point I'm trying to make is that when we become proud, the power, the strength, the vitality, the vigor, the zest, the enthusiasm, the confidence, which enables us to accomplish things, it's taken away and then it's gone. Now, what do we do in that state? Well, the only way we can be happy is through sense pleasure. So a person may drink, a person may start eating. You know, maybe he's 150, 170 pounds, he goes up to 250 pounds. I've seen this because there's no pleasure. We're not getting the inner joy, the inner satisfaction. The bliss is gone. There's emptiness. Well, what do we do? Well, then you go out and you get a drink, or you go and eat some Snickers or Hershey bars or whatever you can stuff into your mouth so that for a few seconds we feel pleasure, you see. Or we go to the movies and watch some movies that so we can get some vicarious pleasure of somebody else's win. So this is the lamentable situation. But here, Bali Maharaj, he knows now that he must, in spite of the fact that he has big time debt to Shukracharya, Shukracharya is not enabling him to become entangled with or attached to the Supreme Lord. Actually, he's trying to take him away. He's telling him to go back on his promise, violate the promise. So no, I can't follow that. My heart, the super soul within me is telling me, don't do that, even if it means distancing yourself from your spiritual master, who in truth is not really a spiritual master. He's fallen. And that's mentioned also in Srila Prabhupada's purport. He's a fallen guru. And he knows this. How does he know it? He's getting the guidance of God. And when we get the guidance of God, and we know what to do, and we do it, then we can only feel happy. And actually, Bali Maharaj feels very happy in making the decision that, yes, I grant you 3 steps of land, you go ahead and do that. Later on, we will see that he's arrested by the ropes of Varuna because he only gave really 2 steps of land. That's all he could give. He gave the earth and the lower planets. That was the first. And then the second, he covered the rest of the whole universe. So, of course, he offered his head. But his head is in the first, because it's part of the earth planet. Everything on the earth planet he covered. So giving him his head was a symbol of total surrender. He says, I have nothing, I know nothing, I can do nothing, I am yours. Take me, do what you want with me. So he arrested him because he failed to fulfill the promise of giving up 3 steps. So what happened was... what's happened is when Bali Maharaj is tied up there and his head is down, he does not grouse. He doesn't complain. He doesn't say, please give me a break. Give me one more chance. I really didn't mean it. You know, like a materialist would act. He doesn't act that way. He accepts the responsibility. He doesn't mind being captured. He doesn't mind being tied up. He doesn't mind being a prisoner of God. He knows there is nothing greater, higher, better, more fulfilling than to be God's prisoner. Because when we are God's prisoner, only good can come of it. And it did. So Lord Brahma comes down and says, okay, he's suffered enough. Look at him. He was the greatest king of the world. And now look at him. He's all tied up. He's been insulted enough. And the Lord, of course, accepted that. He said, well, what I'm going to give you as a result of your total surrender, surrender of body, surrender of mind, surrender of your thoughts, you've surrendered everything to me, I have something really in stock for you that you're going to love. I had Vishvakarma prepare a whole planet called Sutala for you, and he's made it look even more beautiful, more exquisite, more lavish than even Indra's planet. So you're not going to be losing anything. And in addition to that, I'm going to be your personal doorkeeper. And no one will ever able to harm you whatsoever. So you have gotten a big blessing. Basically, that's what he's saying. And Bali Maharaj, he is the Lord, is like a doorkeeper, his own personal servant. What could be better than such association? This all came from the blessings, as Prabhupada refers to,
Prahlad Maharaj as his guru, because it is through Prahlad Maharaj's request that that Bhakti Lata Bij was placed in the heart of Bali Maharaj. And that that seed has come into fruition, and the result of that is now that Bali Maharaj has gotten even something better, and ultimately later on he will even become another Indra. I don't know how many Manus later, but that slips my mind. But the important point is that here he is a Mahajan. He has pure love for the Supreme Lord. He is very, very grateful for the Lord's company. He is grateful that he has been withdrawn and removed from a life of just materialistic obsession and absorption and accomplishment and acquirement. Finished. Now he has a spiritual life, and he will rule in a completely, totally spiritual way, which will give him bliss, and all his subjects who are demons, they all become like devotees. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki. Are there any questions or comments that anybody would like to make? Thank you. Hare Krishna.